Hey, baseball fans, it's time to swing big on your bets this season. Step up to the plate with an odds boost token from BetMGM, an official sports betting partner of Major League Baseball. No opt-in is required. Just log into your BetMGM account to receive your odds boost token. Then, place a bet on any MLB game and activate your token. If your boosted bet hits, you'll score a bigger payout, no matter the showdown. BetMGM is your betting home for baseball. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This U.S. promotion offer not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. For Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary and expire in 1 to 7 days. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
I want winners. I want people that want to win.
Welcome back to We Want Winners. Rod and I are here. We're going to talk about all of the latest happenings in 49ers land, because there's been a lot of information that has come out, a lot of news, including some contract updates that we can talk about. Before that, I just want to shout out, on Monday, we published our first episode of the Valkyries podcast that we're doing, called Valk's Valley. Brian interviewed Valkyrie's first ever draft pick, Yuste Yotite. And we're working on the last name. We're going to get this last name down, Pat. And it's doing really well. It's the first interview, at least locally in the Bay Area, that I've seen and heard. It's possible. I know she's talked to other folks. I just hadn't seen her on a Bay Area podcast yet. So that was really cool. We've gotten some really good feedback on it. And I just want people to know that it is out there. It is on our YouTube page. It is in our network, our audio network, BSPN Media, and also on our socials, on X, on there's even some stuff on Instagram. So it's out there and it's doing really well, and pretty excited that we were able to talk to you today. And who knows, maybe we'll talk to her again. All right, Rod, the 49ers, that there's been a question that has been kind of swirling out there, and I wanted to ask you. You and I are not what I would consider the rah-rah cheerleader kind of fans. We love to sit in realism, though we are optimistic, we are hopeful, we do give them the benefit of the doubt. But I started to see this circling post-draft, and people were saying the 49ers are back. And I look at the roster, and I look at last year's roster, and I still think I like last year's roster a lot better than I like this year's roster so far. Where are you with the 49ers are back conversation?
Again, I can make the case, but see, I'm a rhetoric guy. I would be great on a debate show, because I can take either side of the argument and make a compelling argument either way. So if we want to look at this thing glass half full, I could make that argument. It's just hard for me realistically to be excited about the roster in totality. For this team to be, you know, what I've heard people talk, say as much as I don't know, there's a guy on socials, Coach Yak.
He's talking about 13 and 4
is nonsense. I don't see it. And then the debate I've been having here recently is people are talking about the strength of schedule as the reason why one of the reasons why this team is going to, you know, bounce back. But see, the thing, the problem with using a metric like strength of schedule as a predictive measure is that what you're telling me is a 6-11 team is going to be a 13-4 team this year. So are we using last season as a predictor or not? And if we are, that prediction doesn't really make any sense, because if you look at this team, I know there was a lot of injury problems, and that's fair, but there was a mass exodus of productive players that left, and due to the fact that we pretty much blown the last three drafts, there is a vacuum of talent. So what you're asking me to believe is that this free agent class, which again is 2 years in a row, is kind of meh, if you ask me. Last year, I gave them the benefit of the doubt and was like, well, maybe we're doing this thing where the sum is greater than its individual parts, and they're just going to be better. That Malik Collins and Yaya Gross Matos and all these guys are going to somehow be greater than, and that just wasn't the case. They weren't good football players, and it showed. So now what we've done, and we've signed a bunch of scratch and dent players and drafted a bunch of guys, and you're asking me to believe that these guys are going to come in and be plug and play, and we're going to hit like on 8 or 9 of these, because that's what would have to happen for this team to be a contender, is we'd have to hit on quite a few of these guys, because you need frontline players to replace the guys that left. And it's hard to ask rookies to do that. But okay, let's say we do that. Then you still have a depth problem. So even if all these guys come in and we fill all the spots on the offensive line, and we fill all the spots on the defensive line, and we fill the spots at linebacker, and we fill the spot at corner, we fill the spot at safety, JJ is the wide receiver one that our fan base is clamoring for. I mean, okay, let's say all of that happens. We still don't have, where's the depth coming from? And so that is where I'm at with it. I am really, really, obviously I want them to do well, but I am definitely firmly on the wait and see to the pessimistic side. I don't see this team being, you know, in the league with the Eagles or hell, even the Rams or, you know, any of these good teams at the top of the NFC yet. But, you know, I would love to be wrong.
We'll go over the schedule in a little bit, because I think there are going to be some schedule wins for sure that maybe didn't exist over the last couple of years. And they were actually schedule losses and you could sort of predict before the game even happened. The thing that you mentioned about the depth, I think, is right on. Who's going to be there? We don't know when Brandon Ayuk is coming back. Who's going to catch the football other than George Kittle and Christian McCaffrey? Like, what wide receiver is actually going to catch the football for the Niners? That's a question for me. And linebacker depth isn't great. Their secondary is very young. Lots of things that in the thing that I've seen, Vic Tafur from The Athletic, we kind of pulled him over from the Raiders. I really like his writing. He says that, I don't know if he believes this or the team believes it, but it was something like the 4 to 5 of their draft picks could start for them. Start because they're good, or start because they're necessary to start? That is my real question. So I think we both sit on the wait and see side. Though, when I did see that schedule, I thought, okay, like they are kind of a 9-8 team right out of the gate with nothing falling in their favor, I think.
Okay, that's fair. The thing that I find anachronistic is the notion that a 6-11 team is going to be, you know, a 13-4 team or a 12-5 team, but then you're also going to use the strength of schedule based on last year's performance of these teams we're playing.
That's the other thing that doesn't make sense.
It's proof of that. It, you know, because you're saying that a 6-11 team is going to be a 12-4 team, like these other teams can't improve or get worse. I just think that, you know, as somebody who bets, I know that you can't take the record of the first 4 weeks of the current season and try to use it as a predictor for what a team is going to be in week 16, 17, and 18. So if you can't use the current season as a metric, how the hell do you use a previous season? It just doesn't make any sense. It was, I mean, because every year you see teams that jump out 4-0, 3-1. Hell, the Saints were this last year's team. You know, they jump out to this great record and then they poop the bed for the rest of the season, or the other way. Team starts out 2-2 or 1-3, and then they just get better and better and better. And at the end of the season, you know, they're a good team. It's just, it's so hard to use any short period of time as a metric to predict what's going to happen. And again, like I say, trying to use last season as a predictor is nonsense.
The Niners, before the schedule even came out, and I think this is where the winning the division and total wins and over and under on wins and all that stuff came from, is all the bettors knew and Vegas knew that they were going to have a last place schedule. I think the bet, and I think this is the fans' bet too, is that Kyle and John Lynch, whenever they have a season that maybe isn't up to par, they kind of bounce back really well. And if that is the bet, and some of that is the season and the next year's record, some of that is built in. Like if you compare just on the surface, on paper of what we know today with some of these teams and last year's schedule looks like a crazy, insane schedule compared to this one. Though, like you said, some teams are going to overperform in what we expect of them or what they did last year. But I think it's just you're buying on Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch to put together a roster and also maybe be invigorated with not being able to rest on the laurels of the talent and the success of the previous year. And like, that's why there's bounce back. Like this is essentially, I think, also the bet, which is parity in the NFL when it comes to kind of everyone is 8-8 and you just got to be 2 or 3 games above that. And you're kind of locked into a great position. And I think you're betting that Kyle Shanahan isn't going to have two bad teams in a row. And this is obviously with injuries off the table because no one really can predict injuries. So I think that's where, you know, someone like Coach Yak, and I've seen some of their favorite 49er follows who are on that optimistic trail. I think that's what they lean on, is you just believe in Kyle and John Lynch putting the pieces together. And you have guys like Christian who wants to prove that he's not washed up, and Kittle and Warner were they were given new contracts because of past performance. And so the hope is that, okay, these guys, you know, Warner was dinged up last year, maybe he'll be healthy and he'll bounce back. Like, that's kind of always the hope, but man, the NFL is so brutal with injuries, and you know, it's somebody like a Bosa could get hurt and it just throws everything out of whack. So, you know, I think you kind of have to look at this as if all things were perfect, here's what we expect. And you just kind of hope that you have injury health and that, you know, Brock kind of improves and certain players improve. And there's certain young players in the secondary who maybe take a leap. And it's just an optimistic part of the year for most teams. I'm sure if you surveyed every team or every fan they probably believe they're going to win more games this year than they did last year. That's just how fans
absolutely
work.
And we just, we, you know, we're in the midst of baseball season, and that, you know, hope springs eternal in the spring. I mean, everybody thinks they're going to be, you know, hell, as an A's fan, every spring I'm thinking, you know, this is going to be the year we're going to be, you know, our goals are, you know, we're going to be 3 or 4 games under 500. You know, so my my level of success is different than other teams, but you know, you feel that way. And I, like I say, I can make a compelling case on that, but it's just the things that I look at is that, you know, I had done a study a couple years ago, out of boredom, that, you know, and it what came out of the study is, you get about, especially when you get outside of beyond the third round, only like 5 or 6 players, if using the metric I was using, was playing 500 snaps at a 60 or greater grade via PFF. And you only get like 5 or 6% of rookies that even do that. So if you use that as a metric, the notion that you're going to hit on 5 or 6 or 7 players who are going to be plug and play this season, okay, that is your start. That is a very, very optimistic bent. Even if it ends up 3 years down the road or 5 years down the road that this was a even a stellar draft class, having that success early, having guys that you can count on to come in and play legitimately good football, is a stretch. And then what that does, what that also bakes in our optimistic bent, is that a player like Pooney or Green, that they don't have a regression and that their growth and development is a linear thing, which we all know doesn't always work like that. That again, they could end up being very, very good players, but take a dip in their second year, Purcell. You know, so we're for this optimistic bent to happen, all of those guys that played well last year have to continue on that trajectory, which again, it could happen, but I always, when I'm looking at it and analyzing, I try to bake in a bit of regression because that's possible. And then I guess you could make the case that some of those guys like Cowing and whoever you want to throw in there from last year's draft class, maybe they make a bump. I just, you know, another thing that is just weird to me as an aside, is how every offseason we do this thing where now, who is the guy? The Isaiah Nair is the guy this year that Biros was talking about, who looked like the best receiver out there, which, you know, with our injuries and shit, that's not really saying a whole lot. But you're trying to project, why are we still, after, you know, 8 years, projecting rookies to be productive or to be contributors as rookies?
It's just when that, Kyle won't even barely play them, let them on the
right field. I mean, that, so that is just, it's just one of those things that, I mean, what are we doing? It's kind of like pre-draft, everybody's talking about all these offensive linemen that we're going to draft high. Well, I mean, I would like them to, but history just tells us that they simply don't value those guys like that. So again, but I always leave hope open, because that this season, something they have never really done in the past was seem to value special teams in their draft evaluation. But a lot of these guys that they drafted do have special teams backgrounds in college, which is a departure from what they've done in the past. So like I say, the past, like is said, the past is not always a predictor of the future. But when somebody shows me that they have certain beliefs, I tend to believe that that is what they do. And that's, it has been, you know, kind of said out of his own mouth, they'd rather spend that money on playmakers than to spend it on linemen. That is a philosophical. That's philosophy. That's not something that, you know, if that's something you believe, it's borne out over years and years and years. The one first round draft pick that you could say was semi-successful was McGlinchey, and they were never interested in paying him. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know how you fall on that. Maybe you don't feel that. I mean, he was a great run blocker. He had his problems as a pass blocker, we all know. But, you know, I don't know that, you know, we have not had, again, as we can see, McKivitz has been the best that we've been able to come up with. And that's not great. Honestly, it's just not great. So, again, I can see the optimism and I feel you on that. I've been here too long to just look at these things with rose-colored glasses. And again, I strive not to be a pessimist, but I see myself as a benign skeptic. So I hope that it all works out and that they are a 10-12 win team. But you also hit on something that if you look at everything and say that, you know, if you put everybody at like either 8 and 9 or 9 and 8, as a baseline, and then it's injury luck and overperformance or underperformance. If you look at it that way, you don't have to be 13-4 or 12-5 to make it to the playoffs or to be in the mix for your division, particularly the NFC West. So they could be being overly optimistic and this team still be in the mix as a playoff team and as a division contender. At, like you said, 9-8, 10-7. And I think those are well within the range of outcomes if everything goes well. I just think that, you know, anytime you talk about 14-3 or 13-4, that is, you know, those, you know, you got to be a really, 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 really good football team and have excellent injury luck to, you know, get those win totals.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now. And support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Shout out to Coach Jack, by the way. I do like his content.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't mean to take a shot.
No, not at all. But people put that stuff out there, and I find it to be interesting because of how social media works, how influencers work, but also, you can't be a Debbie Downer in social media and expect to get followers and stuff. So there's a strategy.
Unless you're Grant Cohn.
Yeah, but
Grant,
how many
does pretty well for himself?
How many people want to fight him though? That's the difference. You don't want to. You don't have to want to look over your shoulder when you walk down the street either.
Right. That's probably not a very great life. Yeah, he really leans into the heel role. Yeah.
Absolutely. All right. Let's talk about these contracts.
He might be a really cool guy.
He probably is a really cool guy. All right. Let's talk about these contracts, because the big thing that we've been talking about for the last several months since the season ended is when Brock was going to sign his when he was going to re-sign. And his numbers. Now, it's very interesting. I can't wait for Spot Track to actually fill in the years, because they're I don't know how they get the information or their breakdowns of the contracts, which I find to be, you know, the most useful out of all of these websites that do this, but they only have Brock's current 2025 year broken out, but they have, he signed a 5-year deal for $265 million. 181 of that is guaranteed. Average annual salary of $53 million. And the interesting thing about this contract is Purdy is playing out his 2025 salary, which is $5.3 million. So his contract goes from $5.3 million to 50 some odd million next year. That's incredible. I wonder, I mean, I guess that was part of the concession that he made in order to get the deal that he wanted. It gives them a little bit more freedom this year. And then next year is when they're going to take all of the hits. But what did you think of the number, the overall number, the guarantee, and also the idea that they did not tear up this season? He's actually playing on this season's contract.
Yeah, I mean, that is smart on there. When you look at everything in totality, all the deals, it looks, you know, every, you know, his George's deal is basically a 2-year deal. Fred's deal is front loaded in those first 2 years. And then Brock's deal is front loaded in the first 3 years. I believe I read the reporting was that of the 181, 165 of that is guaranteed in the first 3 years of the extension. Like you say, he's playing out his fourth year. So starting next year, it's the guarantees, 165 of those guarantees are in those first 3 years, which look like, you know, they're putting all their chips into these next couple years to see what they can do.
It does feel like a 2-year push. Like that's what it seems like.
Mm-hmm. And I, you know how I feel about, you know, that 265 number. I mean, the 181 is really the number.
Yeah.
Because, you know, anything that's not guaranteed is fiction. Because, you know, if they don't have to pay it, if they have the option not to pay it, it's you really can't count it. It's kind of like as an employee, you count your salary. You don't, at least if you're smart, you don't budget whatever your bonuses are going to be at the end of the year, because you don't know if you're going to get it or what it's going to be. So only thing that you can count on is that guaranteed money.
And National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation, man.
That's a great reference.
Chevy Chase banked everything on that bonus, which turned out to be like a box of candy or whatever it was.
So, yeah, you really you can't. So, I mean, I think it was a fair deal for both parties. 49ers probably could have tried to play hardball, and Brock's team probably could have tried to play hardball as well. What I found interesting, though, about his deal is the no trade clause, which is kind of weird in based on the fact that the team still has they have two franchise tags in their pocket still. So, you know, he's not going anywhere. And once he's under contract, he's not going anywhere unless they want him to go somewhere. So I guess if I'm an agent and they're going to give it to me, I'm going to take it. But, you know, I don't really, you know, I don't know, I mean, of how much value that is. And if we ever got to a point where they wanted to trade him, I doubt that he would be in a position where he would be fighting it. And I guess now that I'm talking it out loud, it gives you kind of leverage on, you know, forcing. If there is going to be a trade, you get to kind of have say on where it is you will or won't go, which I guess is always nice to have in your back pocket. Shout out to Bradley Beal.
Maybe he was just like, you know, deep down, Shanahan, I'm sure he just wants one more year with Kirk Cousins. I can make sure that I don't go to Atlanta in a deal.
Right. There you go. There you go. So yeah, that's I'm glad just overall that, you know, we talked about this. We've been talking about this since December, is that I didn't believe that management had the stomach for yet another off season where we're talking contract into training camp and into August and September. You know, we've done that for three straight off seasons to various extents. You know, Bosa wasn't really acrimonious. He just wasn't here. And then obviously Debo and PA were various levels of messy. But yeah, so it'll be nice. Everybody's locked up and, you know, training camp will be, you know, we'll be talking about just football and not contracts in July, which is a great,
nice.
I can't think that that'll hurt anything for sure.
All right. So you mentioned some of the other contracts. So Kittle signed a 4-year, $76.4 million deal. $18 million signing bonus, $35 million guaranteed, but there is an out after 2 years. So it is essentially a two-year deal. And then we'll do this dance again. And if he's, you know, if he can stay healthy, like Taylor Swift's significant other, then maybe...
Right.
Then maybe you keep doing this every 2 years and you just keep pushing
people
this thing out.
You know, people are talking about him being 31 and why would you lock? But hell, Travis Kelce, like you just said, he's 35 and still, you know, amongst the top. Well, he was the top tight end until the McBride contract and then now the Kittle contract. So I fell into that trap too. So I'm not judging anybody for making that observation. I thought after last year that there was a decline happening, but obviously I was wrong, as he had an excellent season last year and obviously is deserving of that contract.
Fred Warner signed a 3-year deal for $63 million. 56 of it is guaranteed, average annual salary of $21 million. And this one also isn't really broken out by SpotTrack, so I'm sure they're doing their due diligence on this one as well.
But you know, just from what we've seen, he is in. They're in business with him. Depending, like you say, we don't know if there are going to be any outs in it. But you know, Fred Warner being under contract as of right now till 2029 is, you know, I think that's noteworthy.
Yep. Absolutely.
And these are two guys that, again, I have been watching sports long enough, and you ain't got to be long, you know, you don't have to really be, you could have started 3 months ago, and in your first 3 months, you saw Luka Doncic get traded. So anybody clearly can be traded, but I just can't see Kittle. And now this is coming from somebody who saw Jerry Rice and Ronnie Lott playing in other uniforms. But I just think, I really hope those guys retire Niners. I really don't want to see George Kittle or Fred Warner in other teams' uniforms. But, you know, I also want them to make every penny that they can make. And if it ever gets to a point where Jed and Parag or Nicklin and Diamond them and they can get that money elsewhere, like Eric Armstead, then I hope they do that too. I'm not really in the business of rooting for guys to be like Juice and to be taking pay cuts and shit. That's just not.
Yeah. I have to worry about being cut every year at the end of the year.
That's ridiculous. So yeah, I am really, really rooting for, cause I love the story. You know, I wasn't, you know, jazzed about the fact that, you know, Patrick Willis retired early, but I am super jazzed that he was a Hall of Famer as you know, with clearly the 49ers, a 49er bust. So it, you just root for that. You root for the Kobe story.
So I'll just read off the quickly. I'll read off the teams the Niners are playing. And again, they don't have to play some of the heavier hitters that we know to be really good teams. There's no Eagles. Mm-hmm. There's no Chiefs on this schedule. They do have to play the Rams twice because the Rams are in their division, but they do get teams that we hope that will not be great, like the Titans and the Browns and the Panthers. But anyway, so I'll read week one, Seahawks, week two, Saints, week three, Cardinals, week four, Jaguars. So two on the road and then two at home. And then week five is their first non Sunday game, and that is against the Rams on Thursday on Amazon Prime. Then they get a little bit of a week and a half or a week and a couple of days to prepare to go, but they got to go to Tampa Bay, come home for the Falcons, and that is their first Sunday night football game is against the Falcons week seven. Week eight, they go to Texas. Week nine, they play the Giants. Week 10, they are home for the Rams. Week 11, they go to Arizona. Week 12, home against the Panthers. That is their first Monday night game of the season. Then they play the Browns in Cleveland. That's around Thanksgiving timeframe, I think. I think that would be Thanksgiving weekend. And then they have a bye week in week 14. That's the latest bye week that I can remember the team having. At home against the Titans in week 15. Then their second Monday night game of the season is week 16 at the Colts. And then their second Sunday night game is week 17, the Bears coming here. That might be a fun one to go to. We saw the Bears last year, but the Sunday night game, week 17, I imagine people are probably going to be wanting to get off tickets. It might not be that expensive of a game. And then
Bears fan, so we might come up for that game.
And then week 18, Seahawks at home, all of that stuff to be announced. So from the perspective of the teams we expect to be heavy hitters, the Niners don't really play them. So that's pretty interesting. And I think, again, this is kind of what the fans are looking at and going like, oh man, we should eat lunch. We should be barbecue. These teams are barbecue chicken. And yeah, on surface, it does look like they have an easier schedule than maybe we've seen in quite a long time.
Yeah. And as I say, I don't put my stock in strength of schedule, but I will say that the AFC South and the NFC South are two teams that, as I go into my handicapping prep, those are definitely teams that I look at as under conferences. You know, Bill Simmons has got me on this here, you know, because you can bet conferences over or under a certain number. And so I look at that, and those are two teams that definitely strike me as they like him and Sal made a bunch of money last year betting under on the NFC South. You know, because they just, you know, again, though, that is a division that routinely has a division winner at or around 500, and then one or two teams that are vying for a top four draft pick. So, you know, so you say on paper, so I can see, like, while I don't necessarily subscribe to the notion that I can tell who's going to be good or who's not going to be good at a micro level, on a macro level, those are two divisions that generally are going to produce at least one or two each bad teams. So, you know, that's, it'll be interesting. Like, the Titans look like they are a train wreck, but you know, Cam Ward, I mean, as we saw last year with Jaden Daniels, you get a dynamic quarterback in there and it can change the fortunes of your franchise. So it's going to be interesting to see. And like you say, it does on face look like a pretty favorable schedule. So yeah, that it's going to be interesting. I, I, I am excited for a lot of those games. I'm thinking about going to Houston and NOLA those road games. Cause I just love those cities. Those are great cities. And then, like I say, my brother is a Bears fan, so we might come up there for that game. It's a interesting schedule. You know, I'm kind of bummed out that we didn't get an international game, but you know, they are still one of the most miles of any team in the league traveled this year, even without the international game. So yeah, maybe that's for the best.
Probably Mexico City's probably coming sooner than later.
Oh yeah. They are back on the board next year. Because the stadium's been closed for renovations for the 2026 World Cup. So it'll be back online next year. And then we are fast moving towards a world where every team has an international game on their schedule every year. So, yeah.
What did you think of some of the free agent signings that they made post draft, and it looks like this is where they are expecting to fill in some of the gaps on their offensive line?
Yeah, I mean, well, obviously, I thought that, you know, most of those guys were kind of nondescript. The only one that was kind of intriguing was DJ Humphrey, and mm-hmm. turns out that actually wasn't a signing. That's not something that Mayoko has. I can't ever remember a time where he's got it wrong like that.
So where did he actually go?
He hasn't signed.
Okay.
So it's you know, I don't know if it's just cleaning up, but I guess it's still possible that he does sign here. But as of right now, that is not the case. And then, like I say, the other guys, they did sign two more guys that I didn't know anything about. And when looking at the PFF grades and rankings, they haven't really played much. So, we'll see. I just think that the whole free agent class is, again, it's like last year, kind of a bunch of guys that are, you know, they are replacement level players. And we, as you know, our optimistic fans, you know what, I remember there was at one point people were trying to make Luke Farrell and DeMarcus Robinson huge signings. And I mean, both of those dudes have been in the league long enough to be who they are. Mm-hmm. So I just don't, you know, they're solid players, but none of them. I mean, I guess McCorkle Jones could vie for it. I guess now that Brock is signed, that has gone bye-bye, that McCorkle Jones was going to somehow be, he was going to be to compete with Brock somehow. But hell, maybe he's just looking to rehab himself and get him some Darnold money.
Well, here's the thing for Mac Jones. If he is trying, you know, obviously he's trying to get back to what his draft prospect was, fell out of favor with New England. If there is a rehab spot, you just said it. Look at Sam Darnold in Seattle. Like Mac Jones, like, yeah, like I need to go back to school, man. And, you know, I'll back Brock up and, you know, get some things figured out. And, you know, having that Shanahan on my resume doesn't hurt, and maybe he can get back out there, and you know, then maybe just coming out of being in Shanahan camp next year, he will be more attractive and get a better opportunity. So I think it's really smart. Not to say that I think that he's going to be I hope that we don't even need to see him play, really, but
fundamentally I just think again, I don't know where our seventh round draft pick is in terms of his health, and being able to be a contributor this year. But fundamentally, I just believe you should have three quarterbacks, and you should ideally your two is somebody who can spot start in a pinch. And then three, you've got 4 years to develop that guy. And even if Brock is who we think he is, or I can stop saying at this point, who he's proven to be, and he just continues to be who he is. I mean, even if you flip that guy, or not, you don't even flip him, you just get a compensatory pick every 4 years for that guy. I just think it's smart business to be always developing a quarterback, kind of like, you know, Harbaugh. They took a flyer on Trey this offseason. It doesn't hurt anything. They've got, you know, Herbert is the starter. They've got a backup from the UFL guy is the backup. And they've got a developmental guy in Trey. And let's see what happens. I mean, and because, you know, if anybody has a track record of developing quarterbacks, which is not as easy, there aren't that many guys in the league who are able to develop the quarterback position. Harbaugh is definitely one of them. So as a Trey fan still, that is, I said that in December, that would be the ideal spot for him. And you know, that it worked out that way. So we'll see, but it just makes sense from a business standpoint to always be developing a quarterback, because if you hit on another one, that is gold. I mean, you can just about ask anything for it. I know that it was kind of a distress sale in New England, if you believe the rumors with Jimmy G, but they even got a second round pick out of him. So if you could do that every 4 years to get an extra second round pick, second or third round pick, I mean, why wouldn't you do that?
All right. One other thing I wanted to get to before we get out of here, and this is just more of a note, a kind of a fun note, is it looks like Brent Jones is going into the 49ers Hall of Fame this year. So that is kind of fun. I like it when they bring back the OGs and celebrate the OGs. Gosh, when would Brent have retired? Probably the late 90s. Would that be right? So it's been a while.
That sounds about right. He was a you know, obviously he played on great teams. But he was a valuable contributor. Really good player. And yeah, it's, you know, I like the narrative stories, and you know, he was a Bay Area guy all the way through, from Santa Clara on to the 49ers, from San Jose. So yeah, that is a wonderful story. And to see him now, wow, he retired in 97.
Wow.
It was a long time ago.
You know, so, and such a long time ago, Santa Clara doesn't even have a football team anymore.
That's crazy. That is really crazy. Yeah, three-time Super Bowl champ. Yeah, that's it's well deserved. And you know, in his retirement, he's been one of the most outspoken former players. I guess kind of rivaling. Well, Steve Young has had a national voice,
right?
In the media, but Brent has been. You know, if you're gonna talk about the most outspoken on KNBR, particularly with Tommy T and the Razor for a long time.
Oh yeah.
He was a guy who would come on, and if it was good, he would give them their flowers. And if it wasn't good, he would rip them in a way that you know, it was kind of refreshing, you know, and not in a, I never saw it as like a, you know, in like a social media kind of way. It's like you could just tell he's still real passionate about the 49ers.
Oh yeah.
And he obviously knows ball. So yeah, I have a fondness for Brett Jones, and I'm glad to see that he is being honored. And for any 49er fans, you know, if you're in the Bay, or if you ever visit to take in a game, I really, really suggest you come to the game early and take a look at the goal and take a look at the 49er Hall of Fame and Museum. It is, you know, if you, I mean, if you're a new fan or if you are an old fan like me, it is really worth the time. You know, it takes you back. I mean, to, you know, literally back to 1947 through to the present. And it's a real, real, a little pricey, but I think it's worth it.
So Bretton Jones's career is pretty interesting because, so like you say, it's from San Jose. So he went to Leland High School, and he was a football player, also baseball guy, and he went to college to actually on a baseball scholarship, but transitioned to football. And then he gets drafted by the Steelers in the fifth round in 86, and they cut him.
Mm-hmm.
There was a I think he was injured in a car accident. I don't know if that was part of the reason why he got cut, but so he's cut from Pittsburgh and he joins the Niners in training camp in 87. And by 89, he's the starting tight end. People remember Russ Francis and then John Frank, mm-hmm. who was mm-hmm. a high draft pick, I think in 86. Or 85 mm-hmm. or 86, he replaces Russ, but then he retires very early into his career. So by mm-hmm. 89, Brent Jones is the starter. And then, of course, you know, he's got with Joe, but his career really blossoms with Steve as the quarterback. And then, you know, they're famously best friends and roommates. And Brent Jones will always tell the story of how when Steve was not playing as well, maybe as he should have, you know, he'd look in the drawer and see all these uncashed checks that Steve Young had because he was so frustrated with his own play that he didn't cash his own checks. Like Brenton has got a lot of great Steve Young stories. So it's really cool to see them celebrate the OGs. And that's a good one because, you know, Brent Jones is like he's kind of in this weird middle ground of if you were like part of the Montana Niners or if you're a fan of the Young Niners, he kind of splits right dead in the middle,
mm-hmm.
even though he and Steve are best buds. But yeah, his career is like right in the middle of when all that chaos is happening.
That was a name you brought up from a past I hadn't thought about in years, but in looking up at John Frank, he only played 4 years. He got two championship rings and, I was checking because I thought that was the case. He went on to be a doctor.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely.
That's that's a very, very interesting story.
Probably a really good decision by him too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, basically, you know, if you think about back then, they weren't really making the bread they are now. I'm sure he, you know, at a certain point, he's making more money as a doctor than he would have been as an you know, a tight end,
yeah.
depending on what his specialty is. And obviously being a doctor is long money and you don't have to worry about CTE as a doctor.
Yeah. I mean, unless you're like the one, you know, looking into it.
Right. Smart guys like that, you know, he's a surgeon. So, or was a surgeon. So yeah. You know, smart guys like that don't really hang around playing football. You know, it becomes if you have a career like that lined up, it just, you know, it doesn't make sense to keep literally banging your head against that wall.
All right. So some key dates next week, in about 6 days, they kick off their OTA offseason workouts. And then in June 10th and June 11th is the mandatory mini camp. So that's where we are sitting here in the off season. And I would imagine that you and I will probably get back together around mini camp mm-hmm. time, though, if anything mm-hmm. happens, you know, before then we can get together sooner than later.
And everybody this year should be at minicamp, which will be a refreshing change. All the rookies, I think all the rookies are signed. And then all our pending extensions are, all that business is handled. What did you think about, one last thing, what did you think about the equity sale?
What's funny about the equity sale is one of the guys who was involved in that is actually involved in my company going public.
Really?
Yeah, I saw the name. I saw the name and I was like, wait a second, let me look this up to make sure I'm sure. And yes, so I have this pulled up. I don't want to get his name in. I don't want to get his name wrong. Kozla, the Kozla family, they were involved in us going public via SPAC. Vinod Kozla, he's a co-founder of Sun Microsystems, and he's the managing director of Kozla Ventures. So Kozla Ventures, I think, and my company did like a merger thingamajigger so that we could go public via a SPAC. So when I saw that, I was like, oh my gosh, like, you know, we're sort of connected in some weird way to the to the 49ers, the folks who own the 49ers.
That's a hell of a valuation. 8.5 billion is a hell of a valuation. And he's, you know, Jed and the York family still have another 5% to play with if they were to choose to, you know. So that 5% at that valuation is, you know, $500 million. And so they've got another $500 million, possibly at an even higher valuation, in their back pocket, which is, I mean, when they made that legal to do, it just, you know, for teams like the 49ers or the McCaskies in Chicago or the Browns in Cincinnati, it just makes all the sense in the world to kind of cash out some of that equity to turn it into liquid cash. So, to me, it's always been just a matter of if, not wondering, a matter of when, not if Jed and his family were going to do that. And it, you know,
they have, well, they have 91% of the team still.
But yeah, so yeah, I mean, it's not like it's anywhere near, yeah, you know, the max you can sell is 10%. So, you know, so you don't get in trouble with any kind of hostile takeover kind of situations, I imagine. But it's a fast way to realize some of the equity that has built up in those franchises over the past 3 years. Because I don't know what that number is now. I haven't recalculated it at that $8.5 billion valuation, but at six, several years ago, that put the the increase in value at like 400% since Jed took over.
I think I saw, and now I don't know how these calculations are necessary, how correct they are, but I think in the U.S. sports franchises, Dallas Cowboys are worth over $10 billion. Mm-hmm. And I think the Warriors are number two at like high eights or nines or something. So this, the Niners would fit in pretty close under there if that number is correct.
And what's interesting, the thing where those three things aren't the same is both the Cowboys and the Warriors own their building.
Yeah. Yep.
The 49ers do not. So they have that valuation even with the county owning owning their facility. So again, it just,
how much yeah. of the does the team have an ownership stake in the soccer team? Like, how does that work? Does that play into valuation at all?
I'm not sure. That I do not know. I'm not sure. I'm not sure. So that could explain the difference, because I can't, I just have to imagine. I know that both, if you just look at those stadiums and where they sit, the real estate that they sit on is, I mean, crazy valuable. Mm-hmm. And then you put on the fact that, you know, it is, I was telling somebody that it's cool living here in Vegas now that I'm going to actually be able to go to WNBA games, which obviously if I'd stayed there, this would have been the first season I could do that theoretically. But hell, tickets are so, I would imagine that Valkyrie tickets are even expensive because it's just, you know, you really can't get into the Chase Center for what I deem a reasonable amount of money.
Yeah, I mean, you could probably sit in the second deck for $50 depending.
Oh, well, if that's the case,
not
that is
that bad at all. Yeah.
That's for Valkyrie games?
Yeah. If you want to get closer to the front level, the first level, you know, low end, probably $100.
Oh, well, shit. I could probably, if I was ever going to sit on the floor at Chase Center, I could probably splurge and and buy a Valkyrie ticket. That's good to know. You know, just sit in the...
Yeah, I've been looking because I'm looking for a specific game to go to. And I looked and I was like, I kind of wonder if these tickets are going to slightly go down once kind of like the fervor over the team drops. Mm-hmm. Just a tidbit. It's not gonna, the market is hot for the team, so I don't think it's gonna drop much, but I just kind of I didn't want to pull the trigger quite yet. So
I honestly, I've been so engulfed in the NBA, I haven't really watched expansion teams are normally not very good. So what's the outlook on them in their first season?
They're going to have a rough year. They have a lot of international players. So there's going to be a part in the season where I think they may lose some of their players. But if they're not the worst team in the league, then they've actually done something right. Like
that's just the nature of expansion.
Their number one pick, who Brian interviewed, Yuste, she's decided to stay in Lithuania for the season, play in Eurobasket, and I guess there's some other leagues that she's going to play in. And also, she's only 19, so she wants to build up her body a little bit more to deal with the more adult league of the WNBA. Mm-hmm. So that's another, but so essentially they'll kind of tread water this year, and then next year they'll have their top pick unless they draft another international player who could stay, you know, who could not come. But let's say they draft whomever the best, you know, college player. I don't know if this happens, but Lauren Betts or something from UCLA, who's like 6 foot seven. Like you could essentially bring in like two really high level young players at the same time next year. Though, you know, I think everyone's kind of waiting for Juju to come out, but she's probably 2 or 3 years away. So she's not gonna be someone that will be there next year.
Mm-hmm. But like you say, you pretty much, you know, like you say, it would be a miracle if they don't get the first pick next year as well.
Right. The way that they do the lottery is actually pretty interesting, too, is because I think they average out the last three seasons. And that's how they kind of set the lottery order. And so the Valkyries will only have one season as their average. So I don't know if they'll kind of ding them for that, or if they just go, nope, you guys only won 8 games, so that's your average for the last 3 seasons. Right. So we'll
see.
That's
interesting.
But there's also 2 new expansion teams that come in next year. So,
Okay. That's good to know. I watched it. You know, I kind of adopted the Aces as my team because, you know, Vegas is kind of like my second home, and they've been good. But yeah, I, to be honest with you, haven't really dug into the league. So I follow the Aces, but not really the league as a whole. So I don't know a whole lot about the machinations of the draft and things like that.
We're all learning a ton as
I'm striving to catch up, you know. So and you guys is the Valk Valley will be a resource that I'll be leaning in on to be able to get my, I know the Ringer has a WNBA show.
The Athletic has a really good WNBA show as well that I listen to. And yeah, I think Brian and I are trying to figure out the rhythm of the Valkyries podcast and the Warriors podcast. What we might actually do, and this is kind of going to be an experiment, and we may try that this week. We may do just like shorter episodes, and we'll do, instead of doing a full 60-minute death lineup with the Valk stuff at the end, we may just do 2 30-minute episodes, one Warriors, one Valkyries, and split it up that way and see how that goes. Because I do think there is an appetite for Valkyries coverage. The Valkyries have one beat writer that I know of, the woman who writes for the Chronicle, who is like got the daily Valkyries information. So there's not beat writers covering this team. You know, Tim Kawakami was at the first game, but that's not necessarily something that he's going to prioritize over 49ers or Warriors or whatever, because that's just kind of what his job is. But so I think we have a small opportunity to just pump out as much Valkyrie stuff as we can, because there's just not a lot of content out there. So that's up to Brian, yeah, though, because he's the one, he's so dialed in to a lot of it, and I'm just trying to follow his lead and help him get to where he wants to go with the Valkyrie stuff.
Yeah, they are the latest team into the Bay Area since the earthquakes.
Yeah, I think so. I think that would be right. And my favorite story about this is, so right before the WNBA began, so late 90s, there was another league called the ABL, I believe. And Jennifer Azey, who played at Stanford, played for the San Jose team called the San Jose Lasers. And do you know who owned the San Jose Lasers?
I do not.
Joe Lacob.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Sorry, Bay FC.
The Bay FC.
I guess they would have been.
Yeah. And you know what? Yeah. The Oakland, the Oakland.
The Ballers.
Yeah. And what's the Oakland, the Oakland soccer team?
Oh, yeah. I don't know.
The Roots. I invested like $500 in their original thing. So maybe not five, maybe it was like $200. I should have known that. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, the Valkyries are just at a different level because the WNBA is
exactly a bigger league. So. Exactly. Yep.
All right. We'll be back. We'll be back when there's more 49ers news to talk about. So probably around mini camp time is going to be my guess, but we'll keep you updated on all Giants, all Warriors, all Valkyries news on this network. So subscribe to the YouTube page. And also, if you leave us Apple Podcasts or Spotify review, Brad and I have said we will read it on the Thompson to Clark show. Actually, you know what? We'll read it on whichever show that it feels like it relates to, because we want to read the positive ones to shout out the people who do listen to us. So if you do have a review for us and it's a positive one, we'll read it. If it's a negative trolling one, probably not going to read it. But all right. For Rod, I am Double G. We will see you when we see you. Peace out.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.